foreigners. 1. I'm not obsessed, Violet says, just really passionate about you trimming your side of the hedge. In translation from Canadian, she's about to report us to the city. My husband responds immediately, gladly. The sorrow of the penalty starts sprouting in his throat. He would gladly trim Violet's head, instead of standing on a ladder with a rusty pruning hook in 4 degrees Celsius. 2. From the top of the ladder, Violet's yard unfolds precise as a map. 2 tanning chairs dripping of April showers, rows of flowers saluting the grass. My husband waves the pruning hook to say hi as Violet appears with a black dog, screams Cody, and apologizes for the umpteenth time. The dog is deaf. At home, my husband whispers to me, "The dog can hear fine. I've heard her speak to him in a regular tone." The thought sticks to my mind. Why pretend the dog is deaf? 3. My husband is an avid believer in conspiracies. Traffic jams are an economic plot run by governments. Russian oligarchs keep the state of Israel from collapse. Clouds are chemical trails that will bring humanity to destruction. "Trust me," he whispers, "she's out to get us." Through the trimmed trees, Violet can see us better now. Red, poisonous mushrooms popped up after the rains. The bushes grow wild, the girls' toys still scattered on the garden path since summer. 4. I'm missing Sasson and Galila, my childhood neighbors, who lived across a tangled fence that no one ever trimmed. At lunch, I ate chicken and potatoes with their daughters right out of the pan. I helped sort folded laundry into their closets. I knew Galila's lingerie drawer and her fights with Sasson. They screamed like crows and made up like rabbits, mouth, tongue, all of it. "That's what happy marriage looks like," Galila said. "Not a single day goes by that you don't want a divorce." 5. The day we moved here, Violet extended her hand to me, tall and wrinkled, and introduced herself. "I'm separated. Don't feel bad about it." I agreed. "Good," she said. "When you've had enough, you've had enough." 6. She introduced the neighborhood. Her 3 dogs, the raccoon that tips the garbage pails, the rats, the squirrels that nibble at the rooftops. She told me what calms her: gardening and spreading traps for the squirrels. She has to calm down. Her husband still hasn't removed his things from the house. The neighbors won't stop sighing about the separation. And her daughter stopped eating. 7. My best friend in high school stopped eating, retreated quietly from meals while we gossiped, studied, watched movies. Her body shrunk as though offended. Why did she hide it? Why from me? Still, I nod in understanding every time Violet tells me about her daughter. In my mind, she's dark-skinned like my friend, black hair, thick lips. Violet's daughter lies on the carpet in her room in Ra'anana, leaning over our history notebook, always in those 501 Levi's jeans from the 90s. 8. Galila said, "Those miserable girls whose jeans hang on them like a scarecrow. Be proud that you have something to grab." And when I slouched, she announced, "It's those with flat breasts that should be ashamed." 9. Violet and I talk about gardens, never about territories. About animals, never about terror. When she leaves a note on our front door with the Baptist Church logo, I don't tell her that I was born where the Jordan River extended from the Sea of Galilee, where John the Baptist cast water on the head of Christ, and how, as children, we picked at the pilgrims coming out of those same waters with their sheer gowns. Bellies, bosoms, hips, thin buns, and big buns. 10. The note said, "I have Build-A-Bear teddies for your daughters." 11. My daughters don't play with Build-A-Bears. I thank Violet for her good intention. She figures I'm excited about the teddies, hands me a heavy sack, and apologizes. My daughter's demanded all the accessories. She never took no for an answer. 12. In a better world, Violet's daughter would have taken no for an answer, felt ashamed for being as thin as a scarecrow, eaten something right out of a pen, and babysat my daughters. Instead, she's my dark-skinned friend from high school, and I'm walking on eggshells speaking to her mom, wary but not sure of what. 13. I allow my girls to go to Violet's house to pet the dogs. I stand behind the trimmed trees and listen. I pray she doesn't ask them about the teddies we gave to charity and that they're not too loud, too Israeli. She might tell them something that sounds nice, like, maybe you want to be more quiet? In Canadian, want means have to. My daughters get that by now. 14. What my girls really want is to play every day with Violet's dogs. What Violet wants is for her husband to get his things out of the house. What my husband wants is to crack her internet passwords. What for? I ask. We have our own Wi-Fi. For fun, my husband says. It's easy to guess dog owners' passwords. I ask him if he has nothing better to do. There you go, he cheers. Kirby 111, Gina 222, Poppy 333. 15. Galila said, love is something you give a man anyways, so you may as well give it to a rich man. 16. Violet gave her love to a rich man. She says he didn't do badly in business. She lives in an aubergine-colored house, 4 stories high, with a wooden balcony and a waterfall in the yard. She arranges pebbles in the shape of a stream, places a bench, shoves gas into holes in the garden, runs after a mole rat through the thick fumes ascending from the ground, measures the height of trees with a ribbon. The 2 wrinkles between her eyebrows deepen like dimples in the soil. The 3 shore dogs follow her like a gaggle of goslings. 17. I read that goslings always follow the first creature to move in front of them when they hatch. It's usually the goose. Her march imprints them like a secret password, like hypnosis. The goose never needs to look back. Water imprints the salmon, who always returns to their native stream in order to spawn. Foxes, guinea pigs, chickens, all imprinted to identify the one who brought them into this world and to survive. 18. In late spring, I see Violet's daughter for the first time, stepping out of their gate, floating onto a street, tall and thin as a lone ghost. Her hair is long and ginger, her face fair and blurred like the afternoon moon. If she were to step out now from the Jordan River, through her gown, you'd see twigs and branches. 19. Sometimes an imprint goes wrong. A row of goslings follow a human. A kitten nurses from a female dog. I once had a lover whose palms imitated my hand gestures as he spoke. When we broke up, he said, how can you live when you're already imprinted in my body? 20. Galila said, don't ever feel bad for men. They'll never feel bad for you. 21. Violet doesn't feel bad for her husband. She speaks of him and the words whistle from her mouth in a whisper, like a match before fire ignites. She does feel bad for the cyclamen flowers and spread ice around them when the air gets warm. She shifts rocks in the garden from side to side, and at the start of summer she plants right in the Canadian chill a palm tree that arrives on a boat from Madagascar. I've tried everything, she said. The girl won't eat. 22. I wonder if anyone ever researched what came out of mothers whose offsprings were imprinted by others. 23. My daughters returned from Violet's with a bouquet of purple flowers. They tell me they're called dahlias. they distinguish between the leaves of silver maple, red maple, and sugar maple. They tell me the raspberry bushes need lots of light, and that's why Violet asked them to trim the fence. Their botanical knowledge expands like an ocean between my childhood and theirs. I ask my husband if we shouldn't go back to Israel, risk the chemical clouds, the terror, the high gas prices, the crumbling democracy, so that our girls will eat chicken at the neighbors. My husband reminds me that we don't even eat chicken and asks what it is I actually want. 24. You want your husband to come home with cheer, Galila said. Sasson always honked 3 times when he slid into the parking lot of their home. Galila said, that's what a happy man sounds like. 25. One summer night, Tim is standing at my door, Violet's separated husband. His head high, his hair white like a cloud in an unconspiring sky. He has just removed his things from the house. He smiles softly. He nods and shakes the girl's hand. He lingers on the family photos on the fridge. Suddenly, I feel bad for Violet. It's too late. He's going back to his birthplace in the east. His car is packed. He's standing at the entrance to the kitchen, looks at the onions frying in the pan and asks, maybe you have an idea for me to help my daughter? 26. My friend's parents hospitalized her. I haven't seen her since. Did she ever eat again? Tim's eyes hang on to me as if I was a last resort. I want to imprint my girls as if it's not too late, like goslings, like salmons, foxes, like Galila imprinted me. I want them to hear the inaudible sound of our blood, to identify the smell of my palms, to belong to me in the endless foreignness of this country. Tim bends over the kitchen counter and writes his number on a note, then signs, Tim, Amy Anorexia. He says, that way you'll remember me. He's right. I remember him even when I forget other things. I remember the note and his floating walk toward the door in tall steps, careful, as if in a moment he'll trip over a pool drop in the hall. And now instead of extending my hand to him, I held onto the wooden frying spoon. I remember all of those and his embrace, all that height folding above me like a stalk, and the question he asked me before leaving, standing in front of me and waiting for an answer. What is with you women? Why do you all at once stop being happy?